Also, just, I'm sorry. I'm sorry all season.
I'm sorry all season.
Please let this be the pre-show that goes right before we start the music. I'm just sorry. I'm sorry all season.
And then it starts.
What is up, Salt Community? Welcome to the final episode of Season 2 of the Monochrome Podcast. We are so grateful that you have come on this journey with us. If you're just joining, feel free to listen to this and then go back and check out some of the incredible episodes of this season. But I am here with the whole Salt team.
Hello.
Welcome. Oh, welcome, Salt.
Hello. I'm here. Say hello. We're supposed to all speak at the same time.
Hello, introverts.
This
speak.
This is going to be like rush hour traffic.
So fun.
I said we were here with the whole Salt team and everyone.
We just like pause.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, anyway, so they're all here. We don't do this a lot, so it's exciting to have everyone on one podcast. And so it may be a little chaotic, but it's going to be great. So we're going to go through some of our favorite moments from this season that you should definitely go check out, highlight those. We're also going to do a hot take rapid fire. So we're going to just dismiss lots of myths and silly preferences that people have very quickly. So if you disagree, sorry, but we're laying down the law today. And then we're going to have a great interview that I'm not going to spoil. That you're definitely going to want to stay and listen to. But before we go on, we are beginning our plannings for season 3, and it is so helpful for us to get direct feedback from you. So if you would go into the show notes, take a few minutes to fill out the survey there, you can win some free swag, and you get to kind of craft the vision for the podcast next year. So just take a few minutes to do that. But here we go. We're going to get started with Luke. Luke, what have you got for us today?
Yeah, I actually wanted to kick this final episode off and essentially ask the question, what was everybody's favorite episode, right? So let's go, kind of go down memory lane. I know if this is the first episode you're listening to, which sometimes I'll listen to, you know, the episode that's kind of recent and it's like, I don't even know where to jump into. So let's give a little preview. I'd love to go around the circle here, start maybe with Caitlin. Favorite episode, favorite moment, favorite piece of this year's season. What is it?
Episode 22 with Lauren Sloat, a.k.a. Flurry. She's just such a beautiful person and human, and I love her even though I don't know her. But the title of that episode made that my favorite. Smells like holy, holy, holy. I just brilliant titling. I just love it. It has to, you know, it relates to her interview and talking about some songs, but I just thought that was the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Joe Angel,
if I had my way.
That's a great title.
Yeah.
I would say mine is the one with Meredith. I think that just hearing her heart and just totally like where she's been, identity, where she's going, how it all comes together. And just really with what we, you know, with our audience, what I really got out of that episode was our audience are people that are serving people in the church, serving their leadership, serving their community, serving the people that attend. And, you know, I think in my personal life, it's always been a journey and being under somebody's leadership. And what you give under somebody's leadership, it's like the Lord's already doing something in your calling as well. And so just the way her journey has been that, and then seeing that the Lord was always working amongst her being under other people, and you're seeing the outcome now, it was just incredible to hear and all the things that she touched base on that episode.
Yeah, that was a rich conversation for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
JT, what about you, man?
I think my favorite one was You Have All That You Need with the Salt Worship Team from last year. So here's a little backstory on that. That one was kind of impromptu, and we were eating into the production meeting for the final session. So we had to cut it early. Like someone, I think Luke came in and was like,
I think I came in like three times and I was like, you need to wrap this conversation up.
I do remember.
But it was,
I think you went in three times and I went in three times.
Yeah. So I got in a little trouble with that one. But man, it was so good. Like so much insight packed into if you're a worship leader and like answering some questions that you, if you're a worship leader, battle every single week. And so I thought it was really valuable to hear from them. And just a great conversation. So,
and yeah, they give a little preview into kind of just even the process they have coming into SALT of like, it's not their regular community. How do they prepare for that? How do they earn the room? How do they sort of honor leadership?
Cool. Building trust.
Just even coming to know each other, because some of them didn't know each other prior. It really just shows that spirit of unity and what the Lord's doing and going to do for that week. So it's really cool.
And it's a fun one because it is like behind the scenes and you got to know all the insights from
that. Right.
And a hats off to Joe Angel as well for building that team. So that's incredible job on his part.
It's not not an easy task some years, especially with our budget, you know. Keith, what about you, man, this year?
Well, mine was pretty recent. Episode 36 with Jason Stafford. Everybody knows if you listen to this podcast, I'm a big time film junkie. And what kind of blew my mind was just what his role of second director, how much goes into the preparation for being on set. I think that, you know, from my standpoint, you think a lot of times, you know, you need to prep hard, but on the day there's probably going to be some issues. You can work those things out. And his whole philosophy is that you have got to make sure you've dotted those I's, crossed those T's, so that when you get to the production, you have the creative bandwidth to deal with the unexpected surprises and that you are prepared to put together something. And so I don't know how anybody makes anything without a Jason Stafford on their team. And I just found it so fascinating how much he really sweats in his preparation so that, like, when the production day comes, as he puts it, you don't have to bleed, you know, sweat in preparation or bleed on the set or whatever. I forget how the phrase was, but there was some kind of like meme going around the SALT. I'm just totally lost myself here.
We're bleeding on set.
And we're bleeding on set currently.
That's where we're at.
Bleeding out right in front of everyone.
Jason,
here.
Save us. Jason.
Thank God this isn't live. I did not sweat enough in preparation for me not to screw this part up. But anyway, going back to what I was saying, I think every production needs a Jason Stafford. And so whether you are a small film team or a big one, whatever it be, you need somebody there that is kind of watching all those small parts come together so that, you know, you can be proud and you be excellent in the production that you put forth.
I agree. I'll be real honest. When we first heard about him and I saw his title, I actually think I red flagged. I was like, we need an assistant here. And I was very blown away when we got into the interview of like, oh, this dude actually does all the work, right? Like, truly does so much heavy lifting. So totally agree.
Great reminder. Your title doesn't mean everything.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah.
No, that's more a good than your title,
especially for our community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, episode 29, Samer Massad, that was just a moment. I mean, I remember interviewing him and we had just such rich conversation on air and off air about the importance of family. And I think for those who serve in creative and technical realms, sometimes we look to leadership and we're like, well, it's easy for you to say that, but how do you give us the keys to kind of have empowerment to make sure that there is work family balance? So that has sat with me. He challenged me personally to take some time off this summer and not have a trip, not have an event, not have something that like you need to go take care of the kids, but just spend time with your spouse or your kids. And so I've been doing that, and there have been some beautiful days that have come out of that. So it's been fun.
Love that.
We talk a lot about SALT coming up here in October, but the day before SALT, October 7th, I want to tell you about the Worship Classic put on by Amplio Systems. It is going to be a super fun golfing event. It's totally free. So if you're coming to SALT, or if you're not planning on coming to SALT, you should still sign up for the Worship Classic and then come to SALT. Come golf with us. Come hang out. Amplio Systems is a great partner. They're a partner for this season of the podcast, and they are not just there to install gear at your church. They are leaders who've been in the trenches. They've all served in churches, and they know the pressure of Sundays and believe that your AV systems should support your ministry and not distract from it. That's why they work with churches from start to finish, designing future-proof, volunteer-friendly systems that help you and your people encounter Jesus each and every week. So if you want to learn more about the Worship Classic or Amplio Systems, go check out the links in the show notes.
This season, we had a really great, fun new segment called Hot Takes. And maybe it's your first time joining us for this episode, our season finale, and that's fine. You're going to get a very special preview of Hot Takes because we as a team are going to do rapid fire. No context, no reasons why. This is going to be tough for us. But rapid fire.
I haven't seen these.
I've got four to five here that we're going to do. So, first off, Spotify or Apple Music? I am Spotify. Luke?
Spotify.
Joe Angel?
Spotify.
Keith?
Spotify.
JT?
It's good to know we're not all, you know, degenerate Neanderthals. Spotify.
All right, good. Ooh. And that is because the algorithms are better.
Just
we all know it.
The punch,
all right.
just we just lost the entire Apple iTunes podcast.
Take it to that 110%. Yeah.
We are not endorsed or sponsored by. All right. This
but if
one,
you want to sponsor us, Spotify.
Yeah.
Technically, we're in the top 1% of podcasts because we've done more than like five episodes. So.
All right.
Actually,
that's
Apple
awesome.
Should sponsor us and we'll all switch.
Yeah. Love Apple. Love Apple so much.
Shout out to our Spotify listeners. Thank you. Okay. This has been a huge debate internally as a team. We've gone back and forth. Light mode or dark mode on your computer? Keith.
Dark mode.
Dark mode.
Okay. Luke called dark mode. Keith, dark mode. JT?
Dark mode.
Joe Angel, dark mode.
I don't like, I think some of my stuff is on dark mode, like my calendar, but my computer's on just regular. Like I don't switch it over to dark mode. So
neutral.
Someone who's
so
in light mode would
natural.
Call it that.
Yeah.
Regular.
Yeah, I changed everything. My laptop, my phone, my Kindle, everything's dark mode.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. Well, Joe Angel believes Amen. In all black all the time, except for this episode.
Except today.
Yeah.
I All right, knew next I wanted up. To be different.
In your Finder window, do you do, this is maybe for more Mac users, I don't know about PCs, but in your Finder window, are you using more grid view or list view? Luke?
When you mean grid view, do you mean column view or gallery
no,
icon view?
Like gallery.
Like boop, boop, boop.
Got it. Well, then I'll be the third icons. Option because column view is the only way to operate with efficiency in your Finder.
Okay.
I'll say.
Oh,
if you
I guess
guys
there
think,
are four, but yes, yeah. All right.
If you guys think I have a lot of Google tabs, you should see my Finder tabs. Mm-hmm. So it is. I have multiple Finder windows open, all of which with several different tabs.
I just added you to my prayer list again.
Yeah.
But I use different versions. Depends on what I'm trying to do. If I'm working with images, I put it on grid because I want to see the preview of it. But if I'm working with like just files. Sometimes column, sometimes I'll just have it in grid because it's just got a few things in it and I don't need to see like the list. So kind of depends on what I'm working on and what I need to see.
Okay. I think I Caitlinized these terms. The grid, I guess, is icons.
Yeah.
The got proper it. Term. Joe Angel?
So I do columns and icons.
Okay. You're a toggler. Back
yep.
and forth.
Go All back right. and forth.
Okay, now
Keith,
this will
did
be.
You answer? Wait, did,
no,
did we hear
I'd
from
I'd like
Keith?
To give an answer if I could.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. I thought you shouted out. Okay.
No,
too many
kidding.
People on this podcast.
It's easy with as many people to forget someone. No. All right. So if you've seen Jurassic Park when they're trying to fix the security system at the end and the girl's moving all the folders around, I do icons just for the nostalgia of that moment in that movie.
Oh, God.
I'd like to all make right. a quick color commentary. This is my hot take. The people who took a long time to answer this are definitely not on columns because you choose columns for efficiency, but you had to explain your answer using icons.
I am more aesthetic, you know?
Well, speaking of Jurassic Park, this is going to be the hardest hot take here. Rapid fire, no context, guys. No context because our audience needs to draw their own conclusions. John Williams or Hans Zimmer?
Have we done this before?
Not on air.
This was off air and became a whole thing.
We've done it a lot off air.
This has been an ongoing debate. All right, Joe Angel, Hans Zimmer? I can call you out.
Anyone else? Yeah, call us out. Welcome to
class. JT.
Hans Zimmer, hands down. There's no competition.
Keith?
1,000% Hans Zimmer. Respect to John Williams, though.
This is not as split as I thought it would be. Luke.
See, I once was lost. Now I'm found. John Williams.
And yours truly prefers Hans Zimmer as well.
Whoa. Yeah. Wait, why were we arguing about this so much?
That was going to be far more split.
Wow, can we honor your leadership?
That's because Luke dug his heels in.
Were we trying to honor our elders
Luke
or
dug
something,
his heels in, and we are all trying to convince him
that now you're
going to
call
Zimmer.
Me old and the leader. Okay.
If you are interested in knowing why we chose Hans Zimmer or John Williams, please fill out that podcast feedback form, and we'll talk about it more if it's requested in season 3.
We should get a hot take from our audience.
Since it's been a whole discussion.
We should get the hot take of podcast platform iTunes or Apple or Spotify, leave a 5-star review. We'll see which one gets higher.
Oh, yeah.
Or YouTube, too. You can't do 5-star reviews on YouTube, but give us the likes. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
All right. So speaking of hot takes, you know what's not a hot take is going to SALT this year. Go get your tickets. SALT2025.com. One of my favorite things about SALT, and this is why you should seriously consider joining us this year, is the fact that we are a community. There's a reason that we are not called the SALT Conference as a company, but we are called the SALT Community, because what we are hoping to do is to spark a connection between creatives and technical people all over the globe, but specifically here in America, of people who are serving in the church and doing the same things as you. And what SALT Conference is this amazing opportunity to rub elbows with them, to network and meet other people, to find encouragement and encourage others. This is one of the great things about the conference that maybe sometimes we forget when we think about the speakers and we think about the workshops and all those other different aspects of the conference. But what really makes it special, something that you're not going to want to miss and something you cannot get by just watching it online, is that social interaction with others that are serving the same thing, doing the same things that you are. So I would encourage you, go ahead and get your tickets today at salt2025.com. If you use the discount code Monochrome, you can get $20 off of each ticket. Don't miss out on that deal. And don't forget, SALT Conference, October 8th through 10th this year in Nashville, Tennessee at Brentwood Baptist. We cannot wait to see you there.
And if you're listening to this podcast and you come to SALT, find Luke or Joe Angel and give them an awkwardly long handshake.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's going to be the inside scoop that like you're a monochromer.
Yeah.
Well, no, buy your handshake. Yes.
You never know. We may have a discount code in our pocket to give you to buy something at the store.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, really?
No promises. I love
that. He's going to have that code, so make sure you give Joe Angel that long handshake.
It's the discount code is a $10 bill he's giving you.
Or the physical ticket to give you to go
it'll be in the handshake
off at the
store. All smooth.
I am so excited to have not only the National Religious Broadcasters CEO on this podcast, but I consider him a friend. And I'm really grateful for the work that you get to do, Troy, the organization that you're running, and most specifically this study that I want to dive into. But can you just give a real quick glimpse of yourself, your role in the local church, and kind of what you do with NRB on a daily basis?
Yeah, and thanks for having me, Luke. It's great to be with you. I'm super excited about this as well. And look, NRB is an organization. We've been around over 80 years. We were founded back in 1944. And kind of the core of what we do is kind of a twofold, what we call our twofold mission. One, we advocate on behalf of Christian communicators so that they can have sort of really the best working environment in the public square, so they can sort of be on the same level as any kind of secular organization or commercial organization out there. And so we work really hard to make sure that that playing field is really leveled. And then second, we work really hard to help people do excellence in ministry. So as Christian communicators, you know, what they do and how they do it, and even things in their back office that go on, we try to help them to do all that with excellence. You know, it's that saying, you know, do all things with excellence and all things to the glory of God. And that's where we really work hard for organizations.
It's fun because I've gotten a front row seat of watching NRB, National Religious Broadcasters. I mean, even at the convention that you guys do every year, which is huge, you guys have really poured into the local church. I think there may be a little bit of a stigma that I want to break for our audience right out of the gate here, Troy, that NRB is just for traditional broadcast. I mean, between the Digital Media Summit, some of these other sort of tracks that you guys have done, you do a ton around communications related to the local church, which is why this is such a timely conversation for me. So,
yeah, we do. And look, I have a real belief that the local church is the most important entity we have in the body of Christ. I mean, I love all of our parachurch organizations, and I love all of our Christian broadcasters, radio and television and podcasters, all those folks and filmmakers we work with and authors and publishers. But the local church, I mean, that's kind of where the rubber hits the road, and everything really happens. That's where you can have the personalization and you have the connections and you have the real sense of the family feeling there. So I'm a huge fan and a huge supporter of the local church, and would love to see the local church, you know, really just have the resources they need and the recognition they need poured into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to dive in. The reason that you're on this podcast is you guys have unveiled at convention and recently just kind of unveiled to kind of the world an incredible study. Troy, would you give a little bit of backstory as to kind of how this study came to be and maybe kind of a big picture of, you know, who was surveyed, kind of, you know, when you guys did this?
Yeah. So we worked with the Barna group, the Barna Research Group, and a lot of people may know them. I mean, Barna's a very well-respected, been around for a long time. I have done a number of research for the Christian sector, but also a lot of things in just the mainstream as well. So Barna, we partnered with them. And what we wanted to know back in the fall was, you know, what impact is Christian media having and how deep is the reach into the culture and into the various communities and audiences out there? And that was really what was kind of behind this whole study, was to get us an idea. You know, we're an organization, as I talked about, one of the things that we work on is excellence in ministry. So where can we set kind of the benchmark of this and then work on how we you know, take this study and then help it grow?
I love it. And you're not kidding. I mean, there's obviously a lot of like non-database things that we probably could point to data. I mean, The Chosen is on fire, right? I mean, I saw their day, like, what, $120 million at the box office, and now they're going to go to streaming. I mean, you've seen House of David. You've seen all these things in sort of mainstream media. I think, you know, Christian radio has really continued to grow. But this study, what I loved about it wasn't just mainstream media, right? It included podcasts, included social media, included television, YouTube, news sites. Christian media is kind of a broad term. And I think you guys did this, what, February 2025 was when it was launched. Is that right?
Yeah, we actually launched it in the fall. And okay. So a lot of the actual survey was conducted in the November, December kind of time frame. And then all the reporting was put together, you know, kind of the January, February. We kind of released the first at the NRB convention this year, released the kind of first sneak peek at it all. And then we've recently started to release it in kind of five segments out to help people understand that. And then we also, for our members, we have an even deeper dive into some of the data.
Well, we'll make sure for those who are listening or watching to put links to all those in the show notes in the podcast. But I want to give just a brief highlight. There are a couple of slides I want to highlight of this. And so if you're watching this on YouTube or in a virtual way, I think you guys will enjoy seeing some of this sort of stuff, but these are just some segments. Again, these links we'll make sure, but the first piece was probably the biggest highlight to me. 6 in 10 Americans use at least one form of Christian media every week, right? We talked about this podcast, YouTube, TV, news, websites. But 9 in 10 of those who use Christian media use it every week, which is even crazier to me. That like, if those of you who are going to use Christian media, you're regular users. They're not just, you know, oh, I'm going to try this, but they're engaged. Huge opportunity for engagement here.
Right. You're not just a casual user. You're really, you're involved. You're committed.
Yeah. 2/3, as you see on this slide, these are kind of some of the positive views of Christian music. Again, I'm just kind of, you know, broadly going over these, but I feel like some of this, Troy, will be good for some questions I want to dig into here. But you'll see on that very first piece here, 66%, which is the total audience surveyed, basically 2/3 of all people surveyed view Christian-focused media as valuable in their life. 89% of those who would come across as a Christian media user. Pretty incredible. I mean, I think that That has incredible validity to me for the local church, that we could leverage Christian media that's maybe not just teaching and sermons, but maybe our audience could come up with more podcasts, could come up with YouTube series, could come up with content and deliver it to the mass public of the United States, and it be a valuable thing. Two-thirds. I mean, that's a huge opportunity, I think. You then obviously have to look at the negatives, right? And I think there's something important to see that, you know, manipulative is, I think, as a Christian, I'm always worried that like, oh, non-Christians are going to think this is manipulative. I actually thought it was fascinating that only 38% of the total audience thought that Christian-focused media was manipulative. There's hope in that. Obviously, there's still some work to be made, but hope in that. And then I think this is probably the most shocking thing to me, which I'll kind of just sit here for just a second on this slide if you're looking at it online. But essentially, if you're not, Christian media users are more likely to be on a younger audience, full-time employed, married with kids in the house, over the total audience. That was a shock to me, right? Because I hate to say it, Troy, I kind of predicted that my grandparents were the ones watching and viewing Christian media, you know? But it's me. It's someone with kids. It's a full-time job. It's, you know, married.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing there is as you say, anecdotally, you know, kind of the stereotype of Christian media is it is an older generation, maybe the baby boomers or the X-geners, the older X-geners, you know, are the consumers of Christian media. And this slide, quite honestly, really kind of shocked us as well, blew us out of the water, looking at especially, you know, the Gen Z. You know, Gen Z was the largest demographic. I mean, it's 64%, right, Gen Z? Moving in, that's the largest demographic, and that, yet that's the youngest adult graphic, demographic out there. So these guys were really engaged, followed by the millennials. And, you know, and look, the other generations are engaged too, but it's just really exciting to see that. And I think you're right, a lot of opportunities.
All right. So Troy, I've kind of given some insights on my side. I want to ask you, what do you think was most surprising or unexpected as you kind of started looking at this early on? You've sat with this data a lot longer than I have.
Yeah. Well, look, I think right off the bat, look, we're trying to set a benchmark here, you know, kind of a baseline here. But I think the fact that the general population, 60% of the general population, 6 out of 10, as you said, are tuning into Christian media in some form, really was very hopeful in what's going on in our society today. So the fact that we have that many people tuning in and listening to us, that was that number was higher than I expected it to be. I'll just say it that way. That was higher than I expected it to be. But again, a very exciting number out there. And then the other ones that were really out there, as we talked a little bit about the Gen Z number, 64% of Gen Z, 58% of millennials tuning in and engaging mainly on social media, which makes a lot of sense. That's the main media form that they communicate through and going on that. The other thing I think that was really good was the number of people, you know, because there's, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, mainstream media, mainstream entertainment and everything that goes on, kind of the opposite. And if you look at polls that have been done recently, they're setting at very low approval ratings, you know, very low in the teens and in the 20s. And yet Christian media was at that 60%, 66% found it valuable and trustworthy. And so those numbers were, I think, really exciting and a little bit surprising.
It really is interesting, especially when you take the stereotype that Gen Z is not engaged in the church, it's not engaged in the local expression like other generations have. And I think this is where the hope is for our community of creators, of people who are working in and through local church to try and kind of get the message of Jesus out through their vehicles. How do you think that this has sort of challenged or maybe even confirmed, Troy, some pre-existing assumptions for those who make church-based content or Christian media at large?
Yeah, I think it maybe has probably more destroyed some assumptions than confirmed them for a lot of people, because I think it, you know, we tend to make these assumptions based on kind of just broad sort of think trends we think we see or information we think we see out in the there. So that was, again, behind this study was to get a real specific place. And I think it's exciting because it shows, I think, a couple of things. I've been saying for a long time, we live in the most exciting time to be a communicator, period. Just to be a communicator. No other time in history has humanity been able to communicate the way we can today in so many different ways, so many different mediums, so much different kind of content that we could produce and create out there. So we live in this exciting time. And I think one of the things this confirms is that exciting time is real and people yeah. are really tuning in. You know, so if we're Christian communicators or you're young adults out there, you know, and you're looking at, you know, am I doing anything? Am I influencing anybody? Is my Christian, you know, walk really, you know, living out, especially in my spaces? Well, the answer is yes. Yeah. And the answer is there's a lot of people wanting to hear and listening to what you have to say and to talk about your experience and your faith.
You have a lot of relationships, Troy, with what I would call traditional media, right? Television, radio, more terrestrial stuff. My assumption is most of our audience is not. I don't think that most churches that are listening or part of the SALT community probably broadcast their church service in any regard, in any sort of medium. And so I'm just curious, based on your understanding of this data, based on your detailed insights through the Barna process of this, do you think that this is an encouraging note to local churches that they can still reach the lost through sort of non-traditional mediums? Or how would you maybe come along sort of our community and say, hey, here's what I want you to see in this. Here's what I want you to try in this. I mean, you just talked about exciting times and how everything's changing. What maybe some practical stuff, where would you kind of point people to go, look at this in the data. Look at where
you're at. Yeah, you know, look, the public square has been shifting for years. You know, what we kind of call the public square, you know, take it back 200 years ago, you know, where that came from. It was the public square, you know.
Yeah.
That's where people went and got their information, all the town bulletins, everything was, you know, nailed up around there. And you kind of heard and maybe the people came out and talked and that. Well, the new public square is digital. I mean, it really is. I mean, this is showing there's a lot of digital
and decentralized
and very decentralized. It's very multi-platform. And so there's no one area that really has the full corner of the audience. So we live in a time, you know, like I said, it's very decentralized. It's spread across multiple platforms. And also there's a shift in generational consumption that's not existed before this time because there weren't the options. You know, back in when I grew up, TV was it. So all the generations, you had to watch TV. TV was the only medium that things came in. TV and radio, that was the only way that things came in. You know, yeah, you could, you know, have your 8-tracks and then your cassettes and then your CDs, you know, kind of stuff. But you were all kind of still in the same medium consumption kind of places, even if you had your different flavors on content or you're in there. But today, that's not the case for generations. You know, older generations can still be on their TV just because that's the way they grew up. That's what they're used to. But younger generations have, you know, multi-platforms to do. And if you're a local church and you want to have that connection in your community where you might have gone door to door, knocking on doors or handing out flyers and things, now you have to be where people are. And this is clearly with 64% of Gen Z on, and this was just on Christian social media. If you looked at some other, you know, case studies that tell you, like 99% of them are on media, you know? And so we need to be in the places where media are, where the people are. That's the public square today. We have to be in those places if we're going to reach them with the hope of the gospel.
That's so true. And I think it's interesting because as you were talking about this, I was thinking about the earliest sort of mega churches were probably those that were broadcasting to television or radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you probably look at it and it's those who have mastered social media well, or those who have mastered streaming well, or those who have mastered YouTube well. Those are the ones that have the greatest reach in community and culture at large.
Well, yeah. And I communicate with a lot of churches whose online audiences are sometimes 2 or 3 times the size of their in-person audiences that are out there. And so, yeah, that's exactly right. Embracing that technology. But I will say this, Luke, I've been around this for 25, 30 years, and the church has always done a good job of embracing new technologies and innovations because we're not driven by the same, you know, consumerism that that the secular world is, we're driven by the need to get the gospel to reach the lost to help people grow. That was the other thing in the study that was really kind of neat, was that when asked, why do you tune into Christian media? Hope and encouragement was number one. Hope and encouragement. I tune in for hope and encouragement. And that's great, because we know that the, you know, mainstream media and mainstream entertainment, there's not a lot of hope and encouragement, you know, out there. But here's the thing, Luke, too, that was active that I think should really excite the local church, because we kind of get it and say, okay, hope and encouragement, yeah, the world's kind of. But the number two reason was, how do I love God better and people better?
People are hungry.
People are, but hungry for action in their lives, hungry for something that they can act upon, not just hungry to just listen or therapeutic kind of Christianity, hungry for something they can act on. How do I love God and people better? How do I know my Bible better? That was two. That's two and three down the list. Those are things that I look excited about, because that really happens in the local church too. That your pastors, that your Bible studies matter.
Yeah.
You know, how do I learn the Bible better? How do I love people better? How do I love God better? Because I want it to impact the way I live my life.
You know, I've mentioned this before to the SALT community, so they've probably heard this, but this conversation is reminding me, Gary Molander, one of the early keynotes of the early beginnings of SALT, had made a comment to me one day in just kind of a prep or planning meeting. He said, you know, I really think Jesus, you know, he became friends with fishermen because the fishermen were the most connected people in a society. And he told stories, aka parables, because he wanted messages to be able to go as fast as possible through these fishermen as they kind of tapped all these different people. And he said to me one day, he goes, I think if Jesus were around in the 21st century, he'd probably be friends with all these YouTube celebrities, because he knew YouTube was probably the best way of virality, or social media today, right? This is, you know, 10 years ago when he made that comment. I mean, I guess I just say that to say, you are an encourager of the local church, Troy. That's one of the things I love most about you. Not only are you a huge advocate for Christian communicators and ministry, but you love the local church. You're a very engaged member of your own local church. What do you think this means to the church? And I say the church in the context of an organization that creates content or has the ability to create content. Why are we maybe more uniquely positioned than ever to reach people in a traditional way or non-traditional way with Christian media, right? It doesn't have to be a television show. I mean, we've talked about social media. We've talked about YouTube. We've talked about these. What makes the church organization so uniquely positioned?
Well, I think it goes back to that idea why people are looking at the church and looking for this message in Christianity, because I think they sense the love of God. I think the love of God behind it. How do I love God more? Because I sense that God loves me, you know, and so there's that sense of the love of God. And then there's that local church. Who cares more about the community than people that live in the community,
and
people that are a part of the community, and people that interact with the community and the schools and everything that goes on in the community on a daily basis, you know? And look, we're built as relational people. I mean, all kinds of, you know, psychology will tell us that we're just wired to be relational in there. But I think there's, Luke, some really neat things here. There's some untapped things I think the local church can really lean into, because one of the things is, as you said, you have to have this kind of today multi-platform, multi-generational look at your church. You can't just, you know, look at my church as single generation, you know, and I mean that in both ways. Like, I can't just say I'm going to meet the older people in my church because they're the big givers. And I can't just say I'm going to reach the young people because they're the next generation. We have to have this multiple generational view. And I think that was neat about this is people are also craving that. They're kind of in this multiple. There wasn't some of the deeper dive stuff. There wasn't a fact that young people were just listening to young people. They were actually listening to people that they thought were mature and had information for them, can hand stuff down. And so I think that's really neat. And I think there's just, it gives so many opportunities in your church to engage people, because we live in this, you know, we live in the time of creators, right? I saw a recent study a year ago that said They asked a bunch of middle school kids, you know, middle schoolers, and said, you know, they've done these surveys for years and said, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, for years, decades, it was doctor, lawyer, businessman, you know, kind of thing. That's what I want to be. I grow up fireman, policeman, you know, all those kind of respected thing. Now, the number one thing that blows everything out, I want to be an influencer. Yeah, I want to be an influencer. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an influencer, not a movie star, not an actor, not a sports guy.
Not an
I want
athlete.
To be an influencer. I want to be an influencer. But there's, but today, you know, kids who have grown up, young adults who have grown up with these tools as kind of second nature to them, there's some really neat things being produced. You know, sometimes, I might be getting a little long here, but sometimes we think as Christians, we kind of write off, you know, like, oh, don't go to anywhere near TikTok. You should stay away from that. Or don't go to Instagram or don't go to these different places. Yet we have some young Christians out there and some other places doing some just fantastically creative, godly, righteous kind of content that they're producing and reaching people. And as a local church, look, a lot of those people live in your communities and maybe even in your church. And so I think there's some great opportunities for some talent that you're not tapping into and to reach parts of your community. You know, it's kind of, you might think, oh, the internet's to reach people in the next town, but it's actually might be to reach people just on the next block.
Totally, totally true. Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you look at guys like Dude Perfect, who are out there creating great, clean, wholesome content. It's not necessarily Christian, but the guys are Christians and it's not hidden. And they are at least right. Open and bold about that. We've seen a lot of that in some television stars and stuff like that. Totally agree. I'm thinking about Jeff Henderson, who has spoke at SALT over the years. And he talks about what does it mean to be for your community so much that if your church were to disappear, would the community be worse off, right?
Right.
Or is the community better off because you're there? And I think media can be a great way to do that. What do you think the biggest pitfall is, Troy, of churches or that churches are making when they're thinking about how to leverage their media to reach their community?
Again, I think the biggest pitfall is maybe for most churches is they're just not thinking about it. I think that's maybe the biggest pitfall and you should be.
Or it's not strategic.
Yeah,
just kind of willy-nilly putting stuff out.
And that's where I was going to go next. And then the next thing is it's just, or you're doing it kind of haphazardly. It's not really an integral part of how you communicate in your community. I do think I'm going to go back to Luke because I think we're going to dive down into this. I do think often too many local churches look at the kind of social media, the digital media, and really don't think about that as reaching their community as much as they think about it as reaching the world. But it really is a tool to reach your community. There's a lot of community things that you could be involved in locally and a lot of things you could be communicating locally because we're seeing a big rise in localism just in media in general. In my role, I get to look at a lot of things. And so looking at media, you know, news media or just informational media, there's a real rise in the hunger for people who want to know what's going on locally because there's so many national sources and international sources today. You know, we're bombarded with international information, national information. Where do I get local information? You know, where do I really get that from? And the mainstream media news doesn't maybe give that in a way that the church could give it.
That's so good. Yeah, let's double click on that. What ways do you think local congregations can either leverage this data or leverage sort of, I don't want to say mainstream media, but how can they take their content and hopefully help connect it with that sort of national conversation? Because, I mean, there are people looking for more local stories, local expressions, local context, right?
Yeah, and I think you hit it there with stories. Stories, local stories. We all love a good story. You know, and oddly enough, even though it seems like in the mainstream media that, you know, kind of bad stories or stories of despair seem to be the thing that really sells and makes the airwaves, we all love a good story. I think I was just recently at a streaming conference and, you know, it's kind of the cat video thing from YouTube, you know, why do so many people watch these cat videos, these funny videos of cats wiping out or cats wiping something else out or that. Because they're funny. They're, people like to laugh. We like to have joy. We like joy much more than we like despair,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And we like that. And so, you know, there's so many good stories in our communities that our communities would love to hear about rather than just hearing about, you know, the latest robbery or the latest car wreck or the, you know, the latest fire. They love to hear about, you know, the group of kids that got together and cleaned up elderly people's homes and some of those, because we want to, we at the same time, we want to feel good about our communities. And I just think that the local church is in the best position to do that, again, because they're not driven by consumerism. They're really driven by the fact that we love our neighbors. And care about our neighbors. And so there's nobody better positioned to tell those local stories that not only can encourage their community. Remember, number one reason, encouragement, not only encourage their communities, but also, as you said, might be encouragement for people on a national or even international level.
I love it, man. This whole conversation gives me hope. This study gives me hope. I'm telling you, and you know this, but when I first saw this, I was like, oh, this is revolutionary. I mean, what you guys have uncovered data. And I know that, as you've said, it's really supposed to be a benchmark. It wouldn't shock me if you do this again in a couple of years to try and see, has this grown? Have we increased? I know, Troy, our audience is going to want to get their hands on some of this data and see some of this. So like I said, we'll put links in the show notes. But for those lazy people of our community that don't go to the show notes, Troy, where can people maybe dive in a little bit more to what NRB is doing, this study you guys did with Barna, where can they go to dig in?
Yeah, our main website is nrb-org, or not org, sorry, dash. Wow, I just dated myself. For anybody who knows the old internet, I just gave you a how to use a gopher, which used back in the 1990s.
nrb.org.
nrb.org is where you can find out. There's a whole link to this study. There's a link to the five stories we did on this, the five different releases on this. And then you can come back because we'll be releasing even more information on this throughout the year.
And it's called The State of Christian Media. If for some reason you don't see it, or it'll be right there on that homepage. Right. How can people get engaged, Troy, with NRB? I'm hopeful that someone who's listening to this may have thought, oh, that's just for big television or radio programs. I'm encouraged. How can people get engaged either as a member or through some of the stuff you guys are doing?
Again, man, you can find all of that at nrb.org, all the things they're working on, all of the stuff in those pillars I kind of talked about, that the areas that focused, that we have focused. But let me give you one more statistic that came off a different group, a study I did. And that was the fact that the average social media user has a network of about 450 people.
Hmm.
The average church in America is about 120. And so NRB isn't just for the big broadcasters and the big media organizations. It's for everybody, right down to the individual that wants to know how to communicate better just on your own social media platform. How do I influence those 450 people that follow me on social media that might be my family members or my friends or past friends from, you know, my life and stuff? How do I influence them? Well, the NRB can help you with that. We can give you some tips, some things where trends are going. And then, of course, our annual convention, which is the largest gathering of NRB communicators, is a great place to come and to learn and to walk our exhibit floor with over 260 exhibitors. And maybe to meet people like Luke, your favorite podcaster will be in the hall, or your favorite pastor or person that you listen to in Christian media. You might run into them or watch them do their programs live.
Absolutely. Well, Troy, thank you for taking time. Like I said, we'll put all the links to the study, to nrb.org, both on the membership side, whatever. But thanks for taking time out of your day. And mostly, thank you for championing data like this. There are not many organizations that have both the opportunity and the resources, but also the passion. And I think you guys have collided all those. So thank you for doing that for the sake of the church worldwide.
Well, thank you, Luke. And thank all you guys are doing through the SALT conference and what you're doing to help the local church as well. I know you have the same passion for the local church that I do. And may God give us all the grace and favor we need to do the work he's called us to do.
I love it. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the Monochrome Podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed this season. If you haven't gone back and listened to some of those episodes that we mentioned before, feel free to go check them out. Drop us a 5-star review. Share it with a friend. It's super helpful. If you're not planning on coming to SALT, start planning. Come to SALT. Yes. We're going to be in Nashville October 8th through 10th. It's going to be incredible. Everything that we do here, any value you've gotten out of this podcast is multiplied by like a bajillion at conference. So you're not going to want to miss that.
Yes.
Yeah, technical term. Subscribe and then go and fill out that feedback form if you plan on continuing to listen to the podcast so that we can know how we can make this more valuable for you in the future. We're super excited for season 3, so subscribe. I also want to give a huge shout out to our good friend, Josh, who has been editing this podcast.
Yes,
he's incredible.
We love you,
he's
Josh.
Been very diligent to stay on top of things. Josh. So all the reels, all the podcast content has come from his editing skills. And so we're super thankful for that. So thank you. And out further, thank you so much. We'll see you guys at SALT and for season 3 of the Monochrome Podcast.
Ooh, see you in October.
See you there.